Mahabharata, Chapter 23, Dhritarashtra's Anxiety. In Hastinapur, Dhritarashtra was becoming increasingly sorrowful. Needing solace, he called for Vidura and said, O Katwa, your intelligence is no less than that of the great Bhargava. You are acquainted with all the subtleties of Dharma. You regard all the Kurus equally. Tell me, therefore, what is good for me and for them. Now that things have taken this course, what should we do? How can we again secure the citizens' faith and love? And especially, how can we avoid total annihilation of our race? Vidura replied, O King, religion, as well as economic development and sense pleasure, depend on virtue. A kingdom's success also rests upon virtue. Therefore, O best of men, cherish and love both your sons and the sons of Pandu. You destroyed virtue when you allowed your sons, headed by Shakuni, to play dice with Yudhisthira. The only way you can now atone for this evil and win praise in this world is to return the Pandavas their kingdom. Be satisfied with what is rightfully yours, and do not covet others' possessions. Dhritarashtra shifted uncomfortably in his seat. This was not the advice he wanted to hear. He was more interested in knowing how the Kauravas could secure their present position. Destiny had conferred upon them sovereignty of the entire earth. Now they needed to strengthen their position in order to rule it successfully. What help would it be to concede the kingdom to their most powerful enemies? Dhritarashtra felt his anger rising as Vidura continued to speak. O descendant of Bharata, I once told you to abandon Duryodhan. Had you listened to me, then you would not be repenting now. You can still do it. Cast aside Duryodhan and bring Yudhisthira back as the monarch. Let your sons and their followers wait upon the Pandavas. Have Dushasan apologize to Draupadi in the open court, and he should also beg Bhima's pardon. This will be good for all of us, and it will also save the kingdom from destruction. What else can I advise you at this time? Dhritarashtra's anger boiled over. It seemed that Vidura always sided with the Pandavas and never favored him or his sons. Placing his hand on his bejeweled scepter, he said, O Vidura, you speak only to please the Pandavas and do not care to please me. I do not approve of your words. How do you expect me to abandon my own flesh and blood for another's sake? Although the Pandavas are as good as my sons, Duryodhan has sprung from my body. You ask me to leave my own body aside in order to favor another's. Although I hold you in great esteem, today I find your words crooked. I therefore reject them. You may stay here or go away as you please. I no longer require your advice. However well an unchaste wife is treated, she always forsakes her husband. Dhritarashtra rose suddenly and stalked off to his inner chambers. Vidura shook his head sadly and said, This race is doomed. He decided to follow the Pandavas into the forest and made preparations for his departure. Leaving aside their chariots and carrying only their weapons, the Pandavas had begun to travel in a westerly direction, going from forest to forest. They passed through Kurukshetra and crossed over the rivers Yamuna, Drishtadwati, and Saraswati. Finally, on the banks of the Saraswati, they saw the great Kamyaka forest. Many ascetics lined the river bank while performing their sacrifices and austerities. The Pandavas entered the Kamyaka and built thatched huts in which to live. In the company of the Brahmins, they began to devote their time to sacrifice and scriptural study. One evening, as they sat beside the sacred fire, listening to Brahmins recite Vedic histories, the brothers heard a chariot approaching. They looked up and saw Vidura coming toward them. Surprised, Yudhisthira said to Bhima, Why is Vidura here? Has he been sent to fetch us for yet another game of dice? Does the mean-minded Shakuni wish to take from us even our weapons? The Pandavas rose from the fire and greeted Vidura with all respects. They settled him in their midst, and after inquiring about his welfare, Yudhisthira offered Vidura refreshments and a place to rest. The following day, Vidura related to the brothers what had transpired in Hastinapur. O Ajatashatru, I told the king what was beneficial for him, but he did not care to listen. As the unchaste wife of a nobleman can never be brought back to virtue, so the king will not take to the right path. He will never meet with good fortune. As water falling upon a lotus leaf rolls off, so my counsel had no effect on him. He has sent me away with harsh words. The Pandavas consoled Vidura, and he said, I shall now tell you what, in my opinion, will be conducive to your ultimate success. You should bide your time patiently, and find ways to increase your strength. Perform asceticism and worship the gods. This will help you gain power. Always speak the truth, and be kind to your dependents and followers. Share your food with them, and never boast in their presence. This conduct increases the prosperity of kings. Yudhisthira thanked Vidura for his advice, which he said he would follow. Then another chariot was heard approaching. This time it was Sanjaya coming toward them. Dhritarashtra's charioteer bowed before Yudhisthira and was graciously received with kind words of welcome. When he was comfortably seated, he explained to Yudhisthira why he had come. Having dispatched Vidura with cruel words, the king is consumed by repentance and sorrow. This morning he entered the assembly hall and fell senseless to the floor. When he regained consciousness, he said to the assembled kings, My brother Vidura is like the god of justice, Yamaraj. Remembering him, my heart burns with anguish and grief. Sanjaya continued, The king told me to fetch Vidura back to Hastinapur. He said, Go quickly, O Sanjaya, and see whether my brother, whom I angrily sent away with harsh words, lives or not. He has never done me the slightest wrong. Rather, he has suffered at my hands. Bring him here soon, before I give up my life. Sanjaya turned to Vidura. O descendant of Kuru, please return to the city and revive the king. This is his order. Even though Dhritarashtra seemed quite unable to heed his good advice, Vidura decided to return. He loved his elder brother. He knew that Dhritarashtra was intelligent, despite his foolish behavior. Vidura felt that if he was near the king and able to offer counsel, then at least there would be a chance that he would come to his senses. After taking Yudhisthira's permission, Vidura returned to Hastinapur and went to see Dhritarashtra, who was overjoyed to see him. The king said, O virtuous and sinless one, by good fortune I have got you back. I could not sleep last night, thinking I was lost. Vidura replied that he had forgiven Dhritarashtra his insult. You are my guru and worthy of my highest respect. I came here swiftly when Sanjaya told me of your desire. O king, it is only natural that any virtuous man feels inclined toward helping the distressed. Both your sons and those of Pandu are equally dear to me. But because the Pandavas are now in distress, I feel compassion more for them. With apologetic words, the two brothers continued speaking together for some time, happy to be reunited. Duryodhan, however, was not pleased to see Vidura return. He summoned Shakuni, Karna, and Dushasan, and said, The intelligent Vidura has returned. He is always inclined toward the Pandavas. Before he manages to convince the king to bring the Pandavas back, let us consider what should be done. If I ever see the Pandavas flourish, I shall not be able to maintain my life. Shakuni laughed. What folly are you speaking, O king? The Pandavas have already left for the forest. They will be gone for the next 13 years. They agreed to accept the wager and will never deviate from truth. Even if your father does ask them to return, they would not agree to do so until their exile has expired. Anyway, we need not be afraid. We need only to pretend that we agree with your father and await an opportunity to overcome them again. Dushasana applauded Shakuni's words. I like your advice, uncle. Karna looked at Duryodhan, who was still uneasy. O king, all of us here are your friends and well-wishers. We shall always support you against the Pandavas. You have nothing to fear. But I agree with Shakuni. The brothers will not break their vow. If they somehow do return, then we can find some means to again defeat them. Duryodhan turned away from his counselors. He stood and looked out the latticed window at the beautiful palace gardens. He breathed heavily and ground his teeth. How could he be happy as long as those Pandavas were still alive? Karna said, I know what you are thinking, O ruler of men. I share your feelings. We must root out the Pandavas once and for all. The dice game has not settled the issue, because the Pandavas still live. Karna's handsome face contorted with anger as he thought of Arjuna, his old rival. He longed to face him in battle. 13 years was a long time to wait. Striding back and forth, Karna went on passionately. Here is my honest opinion, O king. Now let us put on our armor and take up our weapons, mount our chariots and go in force to the forest. We will find the Pandavas and kill them. This is a good time, while they are destitute and weakened by sorrow. They have no power and no influence. We will easily be able to defeat them. Everyone was stirred by Karna's strong words. His was the right solution. Without hesitation, Duryodhan arranged for a large force to accompany him. With Karna and his brothers by his side, he set out for the forest. On their way out of the city, however, they met Vyasadeva. The sage had seen Duryodhan's plan by his spiritual vision. He ordered Duryodhan to return to the palace. The prince felt chastened, and he dared not defy the rishi's order, fearing the power of his curse. Vyasadeva then went to see Dhritarashtra. When he had been properly received and worshipped, he said, O greatly wise Dhritarashtra, listen as I tell you what is best for the Kurus. I am not at all pleased that the Pandavas have been sent to the forest through dishonest means. If you do not return their kingdom, then at the end of the 13 years, they will not have forgotten their enmity. Without doubt, they will kill the Kauravas. Vyasadeva sat upon an elevated seat in the Kuru assembly. He looked at the king, who sat surrounded by his ministers and counselors. They all listened respectfully as the sage continued. Your foolish son now desires to slay the Pandavas. You should check him. If he tries to kill those heroes in the forest, he will lose his own life. O descendant of Bharata, Duryodhan regards the Pandavas with such envy that unless you interfere in his schemes, he will cause the Kuru race to be destroyed. O king, why not send Duryodhan to the forest to serve the Pandavas? He will then be out of harm's way. Perhaps the virtuous Pandavas will even come to like him, although I am doubtful. The nature a man acquires at birth stays with him all his life. It seems impossible that Duryodhan would ever be able to humble himself before the Pandavas, or before anyone else. The sage looked around the assembly. What do Bhishma, Drona, and Vidura think? What is your view, O king? You should do the right thing immediately, otherwise your happiness will be destroyed. Dhritarashtra lifted a hand decked with gleaming rings and placed it against his forehead. Sighing, he replied, O illustrious one, I did not like this gambling business from the beginning. I think I was forced to give my consent by irresistible destiny. Neither Bhishma, Drona, Vidura, nor the Queen Gandhari like the dice game. I have no doubt that it happened under the Lord's deluding potency, Maya. I knew all this at the time. But due to my paternal love, I was unable to abandon the envious Duryodhan. O king, I can understand how you feel. The son is always a man's most dear object. But why do you not also see the Pandavas as your sons? They are suffering distress. Why do you not feel compassion for them now? I am now addressing you as my own son. I feel the same love for my other two sons, Pandu and Vidura. You have 101 sons, and Pandu has only 5. When I think of Pandu's sons, I wonder only how I may help them. O best of men, if you wish to keep all the Kurus alive, then order Duryodhan to make peace with the Pandavas. Dhritarashtra slowly shook his head, his brilliant crown catching the sun rays pouring through the windows. O wise Rishi, it is exactly as you say. I know it well, as do all these kings. I have already heard the same advice from Bhishma, Vidura, and Drona. Somehow, I cannot follow that advice. Please, therefore, be gracious to the Kurus, and instruct my wicked son to take the righteous path. Vyasadeva, who could see past, present, and future, said, Soon the illustrious Rishi Maitreya will visit after having visited the Pandavas. He will admonish your son for the sake of the Kuru's welfare. Follow his advice without hesitation. Otherwise he will curse your son. Vyasadeva then stood and left the assembly. As Vyasadeva predicted, Maitreya Rishi soon arrived. The itinerant ascetic, who carried only a staff and a water pot, was received with all respect by Dhritarashtra and his sons. They worshipped him with offerings of argya and other rites. Dhritarashtra then offered him a jewel-encrusted seat in the assembly. When the sage was seated comfortably, the king asked, O illustrious one, was your journey from the forest a pleasant one? Are the heroes, the 5 Pandava brothers, living there happily? Will they spend their full 13 years there? How will the brotherly affection between my sons and nephews be restored? Maitreya looked around the assembly. While on a pilgrimage, I came to the Kamyaka forest and met Yudhisthira and his brothers. They now wear deerskins and have matted their hair, and they live there surrounded by rishis. I heard from them of the grave errors Duryodhan committed and of the terrible danger that you now face as a result. Therefore I have come here to offer some advice. My affection for you is great, and I always wish you well. The sage asked how it was possible that the king was overlooking Duryodhan's evil acts. How could both Dhritarashtra and Bhishma have allowed him to create such enmity with the Pandavas? You are the monarch here, the rishi said solemnly. You are thus able to punish wrongdoers. For having allowed wicked acts to be perpetrated in your own assembly hall, O king, you have been condemned by the sages. Do you not fear the consequences? Maitreya turned toward Duryodhan, who scowled at his words. The sage spoke softly. O mighty-armed hero, I utter words meant only for your good, as well as that of the Kurus, the Pandavas, and indeed the whole world. Do not quarrel with the Pandavas. They are all as powerful as thousands of mighty elephants. They are virtuous and possessed of great prowess. With his bare hands, Bhima has slain 3 powerful Rakshasas, enemies of the celestials, who were capable of assuming any form at will. He killed these 3, Hidemba, Baka, and Kirmira, as easily as a tiger kills small deer. Do you remember how that same Bhima killed in single combat the invincible Jarasandha? Who is foolish enough to create enmity with such heroes, having as they do Krishna, Drupada, and Drupada's sons as their allies? Take my advice, dear child. Make peace with them. Do not bring this danger upon yourself. Duryodhan looked away and made no reply. He exposed his thigh and slapped it loudly, then hung his head. Then, stretching his legs as if bored, he scratched the ground with his foot. When he saw Duryodhan's impudence, Maitreya's eyes turned red with anger. He touched holy water, and holding the sacred thread hanging from his shoulder, he said in a voice like thunder, O insolent one, since you slight my words and pay no heed to my advice, you shall soon reap the result. And the great war which will spring from the wrongs you have perpetrated, Bhima will smash your thigh with his mace." Dhritarashtra immediately became alarmed. He sought to console and gratify Maitreya with gentle words, asking him to be merciful to Duryodhan. Maitreya said that if Duryodhan made peace with the Pandavas, the curse would be lifted. Otherwise, it would not be reversed. Dhritarashtra felt a little relieved, having managed to mitigate Maitreya's curse. He then said, "O Rishi, we have heard how Bhima destroyed Hidimba and Baka, but not Kimira. Who was this demon? What was his strength and how was he killed? We wish to know everything." Maitreya replied, "I will not speak any further to this assembly house, because Duryodhan has rejected my words. Vidura knows well the history of Kimira." And with that the sage rose and left the city. When the offended sage was gone, Dhritarashtra asked Vidura to relate the story. Vidura replied, "O king, I heard this story from Yudhisthira when I spoke to him in the forest. Having left Hastinapur, the Pandavas traveled for 3 days and nights, finally arriving at the Kamyaka forest. As they moved through this forest during the fearful hours of the night, they encountered a terrible Rakshasa with flaming eyes. He stood as tall as a tree and held a blazing torch. With arms and legs outstretched like the branches of a huge sal tree, he blocked the Pandava's path. He had 8 fangs protruding from his wide-open mouth, and his eyes were the color of copper. His flaming red hair stood erect, and he resembled a mass of clouds charged with lightning and adorned by a flock of cranes. Roaring like thunder, he spread the Rakshasa illusion and confounded the Pandava's senses." The assembly listened spellbound as Vidura told the story. Birds and other creatures dropped down everywhere simply from hearing the demon's awful cries. Deer, buffaloes, leopards, and bears fled terrified in all directions. The forest itself seemed to be moving due to all the fleeing creatures. A violent wind blew up, and dust clouds swirled. Even as grief is the greatest enemy of the 5 senses, so that Rakshasa appeared to the 5 Pandavas. Spying the brothers from a distance, clad in their deer skins and carrying weapons, the Rakshasa obstructed their path like the Bainaka mountain. When Draupadi saw the horrifying creature, she closed her eyes and stood amid her husband's like an agitated river amid 5 hills. Domya at once uttered Vedic mantras to counter the demon's illusions, and the wind ceased and the dust settled. Seeing his power checked, the Rakshasa opened his eyes in anger. He looked like death himself. Yudhisthira was stern. "Who are you? What do you want of us?" The Rakshasa replied, "I am Kirmira, the brother of Baka. I live comfortably in this uninhabited forest. I eat all men foolish enough to come here. Who are you that have come today to become my food?" "We are the 5 sons of Pandu," Yudhisthira answered. "We have been exiled from our kingdom and desire to spend our time in this forest, which is your dominion." When their identity was disclosed, the Rakshasa bellowed in joy. "Ha! What good luck! Fate has today accomplished my long-cherished desire. I have wandered around in the hope of finding Bhima, my brother's killer. Now he stands here before me at the dead of night, when my power is greatest, and when I am hungry. Disguised as a Brahmin, this wretch slew my brother and stole his sister. I shall now wreak my vengeance upon him. I will kill him and offer his blood to Baka's departed soul. In this way I shall be freed from my debt to my brother. I shall devour Bhima, digesting him, even as Agastya digested the Asura, Vatapi." Yudhisthira rebuked the Rakshasa. "This can never be." The mighty Bhima at once tore up a huge tree and stripped it of its branches, and in the twinkling of an eye Arjuna had strung his bow and stood with an arrow at the ready. But Bhima stopped his brother and advanced alone to face the demon. Tightening his waistcloth, he shouted an angry challenge. "Stay and fight!" Armed with the tree, he rushed toward him. As Indra hurls his thunderbolt, Bhima brought down the tree with force upon the Rakshasa's head. The tree smashed to pieces, while the demon remained unmoved. He hurled his flaming brand at Bhima, and it flew toward him like a streak of lightning. Bhima dropped quickly to the ground and turned the torch away with his left foot. Roaring terribly, the Rakshasa himself tore up a great tree and rushed at Bhima like Yamaraj bearing his death-dealing staff. The two combatants pulled up tree after tree and hurled and smashed them together as they fought. The battle resembled the fight of old between Vali and Sugriva, and soon a large area of the forest had been stripped of trees. The angry demon then lifted and hurled a massive rock at Bhima, who caught the boulder and tossed it back. Kirmira rushed at Bhima with outstretched arms, even as Rahu goes to devour the sun. They grapple together, rolling about on the earth like a couple of infuriated bulls locked in mortal combat. The fight was fierce and hard, lasting for almost an hour. Bhima, proud of his strength, was conscious of Draupadi watching him. Then he remembered Duryodhan's insults toward the princess. Looking at the demon as if he were the Kauravas, Bhima's anger swelled. He seized the Rakshasa, like one maddened elephant seizing another. Kimura also seized the Pandava, but Bhima lifted him and threw him down violently. He then took hold of the demon by the waist and began to shake him as trees are shaken by the wind. Even as he was being shaken, the demon reached up and with all of his strength grasped hold of Bhima by the neck. Bhima repeatedly lifted and smashed the Rakshasa down, even as the demon gripped him with hands like steel vices. The earth shook, and the forest echoed with the sound of Kirmira's body striking the ground. He roared fearfully, like a discordant trumpet. Bhima lifted him and whirled him around with tremendous power. Seeing that the Rakshasa had fallen unconscious, Bhima threw him to the ground, placed his knees on his chest, and strangled him. As the demon died, Bhima said, "O sinful wretch, you need no longer wipe away the tears of Bhaka and Hidimba's relatives, for you are now going to join them." Leaving Kimura's body lying on the path, devoid of clothes and ornaments, Bhima rejoined his brothers. They gathered around him and praised him. Again placing Draupadi in the center of their party, they entered deeper into the forest. The assembly was amazed to hear this story. Vidura concluded, "This is what I heard from Yudhisthira. When I was passing through the forest, I saw for myself the Rakshasa's body after being smashed by Bhima's blows." Dhritarashtra sighed and said nothing. He was becoming increasingly anxious. Bhima had promised to kill all his sons. Who or what could ever prevent him from fulfilling his promise? The king's heart burned with fear and anguish.